Matthew chapter 5. I hope you've been able to maybe take a look at that or give some consideration or maybe do your own Bible study on it. If you have some thoughts you'd like to share, we'd like to hear it. We're in verse 13. And just a couple of these verses we'll read. Let's read them together. And then if you've got a thought you'd like to share before I start running away with my thoughts, we'll give you a chance to do that, okay? So let's read together Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. I think there's certainly a balance between the spiritual aspect of being spiritual before people. I think that's certainly a necessity and a command. But there's also the very practical, like Maureen shared, you know, just some things, the cup of cold water, just those things that, you know, we watch Jesus do when he walked the earth. You know, the touches, the mercy, you know, when others are breaking and, you know, you know, the reed, the flax, you know, the wick that he won't extinguish, those that are weak and vulnerable and hurting. You know, Jesus was always tender, merciful, saw to those that needed, and to those that needed the strong hand, he was that too. But we've been hearing so much about a world that is so broken and desperate and confused and empty, and there are simple little things that we can do that draw people to Christ without preaching sermons to them. But usually those little things give us the opportunity to preach those sermons to them. They're drawn to those things like they were drawn to Jesus when Jesus began to minister to those that are broken and, you know, sheep without a shepherd, and he began to touch them and minister to them. They flocked to him, and then he preached. then he taught. And sometimes, so there's that balance, that hand in hand of, you know, we don't have to always be on the street corner with a megaphone and a Bible. And sometimes we do. But usually you'll draw the crowd, you'll draw the audience when they see Jesus living out in your life and doing, you know, was that amplified version you're reading or? Okay. You know, so that gives us a whole lot of other, you know, pictures of these words that are being shared here that expand on what does that mean to live out our works. So it brings us to that's sort of the wrap up of the first part of this being salt and being light. Salt in the day of Jesus and today also in a lot of parts of the world that don't have the technologies and the conveniences that we have today, salt is and was used in a lot of different ways that we don't have to use today, such as preserving. We talked about that. But when Jesus referred to salt, there was kind of an instant understanding of, you know, the application of salt and what that means. And there are a lot of ways that you can use salt. You can go to saltinstitute.org. If you want, don't do it now with your smartphones. You can do it later. Just you can take my word for it. But they say that there are over 14,000 uses for salt, and some of the things that you can use salt for, besides what we've heard, is removing pin feathers from chickens, removing perspiration and blood stains, treating mosquito and chigger bites, invigorating goldfish, don't overdo it, they might die, deodorizing shoes, you can overdo that, making mini volcanoes, removing tattoos, I don't know, I don't think if you just rub salt on, but it's used in the process of, or getting leeches off of you, out of the lake, or melting slugs on the sidewalk. These are all things you can do with salt. And there's great value in salt. I mean, it's used in all of these thousands and thousands of ways, but some very practical ways. There were wars that have been fought over salt. The Civil War, one of the great battles that were fought were over salt storage and salt mines. And there were thousands of soldiers that were killed just in that war, kind of defending the salt because of the great value of that. We've got terms and expressions that arise from this. In ancient Greece, they would exchange slaves for salt. It was just used in trade and in commerce, and that's where we get the expression, not worth his salt. There were rations that were given to Roman soldiers. They were known as solarium argentums, and that was kind of the forerunner and the context of where we get our word salary. They were paid in salt, but we use that word salary today. Salt is vital for life, and some of you have already been talking. Let me fill in some of the blanks for you so you at least have your page done. Number one, salt holds back decay. So that we know, especially in days where no refrigeration or in parts of the world where there's no refrigeration, you use salt and you salt down your meat and other products, and then the maggots don't eat through it and it doesn't rot and decay. And it's something that can be stored now without having to go into freezers and refrigeration. There's a contrast in Scripture. There are two substances that are mentioned in the Bible that are significant. This is in your notes also, blanks. One is yeast, one is salt, and they're contrasting ideas. What is yeast a picture of or represent when it's used in Scripture? Sin. Right, so that's one side of it, that we're not to have yeast in their sacrifices in the Old Testament, and salt is a picture of the opposite, where it represents holiness, the power of righteousness to hold back decay. And so God, Jesus, is giving us this picture here of being salt in the world. You ought to be living a life in such a way that decay and sin is being held back, the opposite of yeast. Yeast works one way, salt works another way. Lot is an example in Genesis chapter 8. We find Lot in Sodom, right? And God is talking to Abraham saying, I'm going to judge these cities. And Abraham's pleading with God, oh, if we can find 50 righteous, 40 righteous, goes, you know, down to 10. If we can find 10 righteous, will you hold off your judgment? And here's Lot and his family that you know, ought to have been salt in the world, ought to have been salt in those cities, ought to have been holding back the decay and an influence against sin. And he failed in that, but God has called us to be, even in ungodly places like Sodom and Gomorrah, or the town you live in, and the world we live in, sometimes we feel like, you know, what influence can I possibly have? Evil and wickedness is so rampant and overpowering and overwhelming. My puny little voice, my puny little testimony, my stand in this big sea of sin, what possible influence and impact can I have? But we do. Jesus says, we are salt. You may not be able to cover the whole of it, but you can impact where you are to hold back decay. Jesus, in chapter 17 of John, I put it in your notes. You know what chapter 17 of John is? It's prayer. It's Jesus' prayer. And we just have insight to the heart of Christ as he's praying to the Father, and he's praying primarily for us. And it's really, really cool to read John 17 and realize that those words that Jesus is praying is for me. They were certainly for his disciples of that day directly, but they are for all of his disciples that would ever walk the earth. And so it applies to us. And in that prayer, Jesus prays these words in verse 15, Father, I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that as they're in the world, you'll keep them. But here's the prayer. Jesus isn't saying, deliver them from all of this. He's saying, Father, not asking you to do that. I'm asking you to keep them in the world. I'm asking you to put a hedge about them as they're going about their business in the world, as they're increasing and establishing the kingdom in this world. And so the prayer for us that Jesus prayed is, you're going to be here, but be the influence that I want you to be, that the Father desires you to be. Be this salt to hold back decay. The next thing, number two, is that salt creates thirst. And that ought to be one of the aspects, one of the attributes of a Christian, is that when others are around us, there is a thirst that is created. My wife shared, the water is retained. There's something about salt that attracts water, that makes thirsty, and so we absorb that and we hold that. And there's a reason you go into a restaurant, and they may put a bowl of peanuts in front of you, or you want unlimited chips, here you go. For $2.99, you can get all the salty chips you want, because the more salty chips you eat, the more drinks you're going to buy. And as long as we can keep you thirsty, we're making money. And so salt, salt, salt. And if we are in the world as salt, there are those around us who are going to say, there is something about you that is attractive, that is drawing me, that's putting a thirst within me. When I go through trouble and turmoil in my family or on my job or in my school or with my friends, and there's this conflict and there's this struggle, and I've watched you go through things like that or worse, and I've seen joy and I've seen peace, and you seem to just kind of be able to stand through that, and my world's crumbling and I can't sleep at night and I'm getting ulcers and I'm troubled, and there's something about you that I really like and I'm attracted to. What is it? And so it gives us opportunity to share. Here's my story. This is the reason for my peace. This is the reason for my joy. You stand up on your job, in your school, everybody's doing something one way, and that flips back to the other aspect that soul holds back decay. Our lives ought to reflect the holiness of God, and it ought to look different. People ought to see something different in us. But these things begin to attract people, and it opens doors, gives us opportunity. So you've got people, in your school, and who's cheating what. You got a job, and your boss is telling you, well, listen, this is how we're doing it, and this is the way we do it, and you're going to lie this way, and you're going to cheat this way, and there's just sort of an understanding. And you deal in the business world, it's unbelievable. That there is no question. They don't blink at lying, cheating, just this mentality that as long as we can get ahead. And so in the schools, the same thing. Doesn't matter how I get my grades, as long as I get ahead. And so we cheat and lie and do whatever. And it's going to take some backbone to stand up. And you need to be some salt out there. Sister Jean, you were sharing about your daughter struggling with some of those things. There's just, you know, an expectation. You're going to lie and you're going to do things that are unethical. And it takes some real strength then to say, you know what, I don't do that. And it may cost me my job. It may cost me my grade. It may cost me my scholarship. But I just don't do that. And God honors that. But God will also draw others when we're standing for Him in the world. So now the next thing He says is that we're light. And we read Ephesians 5, which gives us a lot of insight to what that means and what darkness is and what light is. There was a moment in the life of Jesus. It's John chapter 8. If you want to flip there, you can. You probably have heard this maybe 100 or 1,000 times. In John chapter 8, well, we go back to the beginning of John chapter 7. It kind of sets the scene for us. We read John 7:1. After Jesus went about in Galilee, he would not go about in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Now the Jews' feast of booths was at hand. Okay, so here it is. In the beginning of chapter 7, the feast of booths. Do you know what that is? The feast of booths. It was also called the feast of tabernacles. You familiar with that feast at all? Okay, so go Google it, because I don't have time this morning to go into all of that. Some of you, if you live in the city, you've even seen this in some of the more Orthodox Jewish communities. This usually is in the fall, September, October, and how the calendars flip around a little bit. It's just some days after the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, that they celebrate. But you go to some Orthodox places in the city, and you can be driving through like city neighborhoods. This isn't out in the country, just houses on top of each other and small little lawns, and sometimes you can see booths built on their property. Right in the city, if you go into some certain areas, the Orthodox areas, they still celebrate this way. They were commanded to build these little booths and little like a mini hut. And they would build that, and it had much significance in the Old Testament regarding the tabernacle and some other important events that took place in God's deliverance for them. And they would live in these little booths for the length of this feast. And the feast was primarily about Thanksgiving and harvest and what God has done and His provision and His faithfulness, and almost a little bit like our Thanksgiving celebration. And so that's what they would do. And like I said, even today, there are those that still do this. And they set up their little booths, and they're supposed to live in there for these days. This is the start of chapter 7, when they began this feast of booths. And then there are some things that took place in here and transpired. Verse 37 of John 7, I referred to this earlier in the week, the last day of the feast, the great day, this is the climax of the feast, Jesus stood up and cried out, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink." And so we go through there, and that wraps up. Beginning of chapter 8, we have this woman who is caught in adultery early in the morning. So this is the next day after the great day of the feast, where Jesus says, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink." Right, and so it says then early in the morning, which is the day after. Now here's what happened the day after, or here's what happened the night of the great feast. History tells us that in the temple there were these huge pillars that were as high as the temple walls. And on top of these four huge pillars were these big bowls that would hold 65 liters thereabout of oil, and so they would be filled with oil, and at night they would climb up to the top of these pillars outside the temple, and they would light up these huge torches, and it would literally kind of not just light up the temple area and surrounding, but they said that the light of these huge torches would light up all of Jerusalem. And so this was part of their great celebration, the night of the great feast, the last night. And so that's taking place here, these massive candelabras. And the Mishnah tells us that men of piety and good works used to dance before them with burning torches in their hands and singing songs and praising. And countless Levites played on harps and lyres, cymbals and trumpets and instruments of music. So this was an elaborate celebration and ritual that's taking place on this last night of the feast. And so then we read in the beginning of chapter 8, the next morning Jesus is brought this woman in adultery, deals with that. But when that scene is done, in verse 12, Jesus spoke to them again and stands up here before those in the temple treasury the following morning. And what does he say? I am the light of the world. Now put that in context of what they're doing. They're celebrating this great light, and it goes back to a lot of their history again. And so they light up the city with these huge torches in the temple, and they're dancing and they're singing and they're playing their tambourines and they're praising, and they're just this big huge celebration under the lights. And then Jesus in the morning says, you want to know light? You want to celebrate light? The light that you are celebrating here, and this is what it flipped back to, the light that you celebrate back in your history, the light that you're dancing and praising God about, which was a reminder of the pillar of fire in the wilderness that led you, the cloud, the Shekinah glory, the presence of God that would come down and settle upon the temple later on, the cloud. He says, this that you celebrate last night with these huge torches that are lighting up the city and remembering the presence of God in your midst, I am that presence. I am that light. I am the God that led you in the wilderness, pillar of fire by day, cloud by night. The God that you danced and celebrated and praised last night under the torches. I am the light of the world. And so this is a bold proclamation. Remember, we mentioned earlier in the week, John's purpose of writing his gospel was what? His theme is, I'm sorry, that we would know what? That Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He's God. And all of what John wrote, from his parables, which were few, but the miracles and the teachings, John is trying to get across Jesus is God, Jesus is God, Jesus is God. And so this is really significant when they're celebrating God as the light of the world, and then Jesus stands up and says, I am that light. John's trying to help us see, he's saying he's God. And that light has come to us. We read in Ephesians, and Maureen gave us a few verses, and I put a bunch in your notes. John chapter 3, 2 Corinthians 4, Ephesians 5, 8. For you were once darkness, we read, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light. Now, we know that Jesus is the light. Then we often make this kind of connection, and it is true and accurate, that we are simply the reflection of that light, right? And we've used illustrations like the sun is the source of light, and the moon, it has no light in and of itself. It just reflects from the other side of the world. And so we're in darkness and the sun's being blocked, but it still hits the moon and reflects to us, and we can come out here at night if there's a full moon, and you don't need flashlight lights because there's enough light from the moon to actually light up the darkness. But we know the moon isn't light, and so we use that illustration to say, well, we are not light, but just a reflection of, and that is true and accurate. But there's something more than that, because the Bible does tell us that when Christ lives within us, there ought to be, I mean, we, not in ourselves, but the fact that the Spirit of God is alive in us, Jesus lives in us, there is a light that is generated from us, a work, a supernatural work of the Spirit. It is part now of my person, my spirit. And so don't discount the fact that the Spirit of God is at work and alive in us, and light is shining from us because of that reality. And so we have these pictures at John chapter 3. Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. You are the light of the world. And so this needs to be, you were once darkness. We read that in Ephesians 5. And so these are the realities, the truths that ought to be part of our lives as salt and light. The spiritual function of light in the world. Let's wrap this up. Number one, we are a city on a hill, right? That's what Jesus said back in these verses. You are a city on a hill. And cities generate light. Even in ancient days, there would be enough light that you'd be able to see a visible city. And you take a plane and you fly over at night, and you can see dark, 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 dark. There's nothing out there. And then all of a sudden you just see everything lit up, and a whole section of the earth is just bright. You can't miss that. You go to Quito in Ecuador. I was there a couple times. I know I was there at least once. And it's 10,000 feet elevation. It's way up. And the lights of Quito, this city in the middle of the mountains, they say 75 miles around you can see the lights of that city. You cannot be hidden. And so this is what we're called to be. No such thing as an invisible believer. The second thing is that we are to be like this household lamp. You don't put it under a bowl. You don't cover it up. When you light a lamp, you put it out in the middle of the room so that it can generate the light and give you what you need. It's something that reveals things as they are. It exposes. And this is good, because we prayed again this week, Lord, show us, reveal things to us, search our hearts, know our thoughts. God, things that I don't even know are displeasing to you. God, reveal that to me. The things in the recesses and in the corners of my heart and of my life that maybe I'm not even aware of. I just ignored it. It's just not been there. I don't know if they do this anymore up at in the village in Nonantum. Some of you are counselors, you can tell me. But back in the day, when I was a camper, we still have inspections, daily inspections, okay? And I don't know, did head counselors come around? Who comes around to inspect? Okay. Back in my day up in the village, the head counselors would come around, and so we would line up like soldiers in front of the cabin after you did all your chores and put things together. And then they would come in and do the white glove treatment, open the lockers, they'd look up in the lofts. This is every day, I mean, like, you know, boot camp stuff. And they check how tight the sheets were on your bed. Do you still kind of do that much? Not quite as intense? Okay, but we did. And one of the things they did to make sure that you swept like way in the corners under your bed, I mean, we had to pull bunks out every morning. Like, what do you think went on in the cabin that every morning we got to pull bunks out and get But you take a flashlight, and if you put the flashlight on the floor and angle it the right way, a grain of sand will look like a mountain on the wall. Try it. And so they'd come in with a flashlight, and they get on their hands and knees under the bed, and you tilt it the right way, and you can see if there's a grain of sand under. Now, you're at Pilgrim Camp. A grain of sand. I mean, there's sand everywhere. But we couldn't have a grain of sand. And then they'd scan the floor, and you can see a grain of sand would cast this huge shadow on the wall. That's what light does. It'll expose the grain of sand that's hidden in the corner. Now, that's a good thing. That is a good thing for God to expose those things so that they can be taken out of our lives, and we can be that church that is pure and holy and spotless and without blemish. It's a good thing that light exposes darkness. Now, God has called us to be this. And I don't know where you are in life and where you're going in life. I don't know the plans and purpose God has for you, but He does. And from the womb and before, God has designed you and purposed you for a lot of different things, but there are some things that He has designed and purposed all of us for, the same thing, and that is to be salt and light, so that no matter where we live, no matter where we go to school, no matter the career path that we take, God has a plan for us, and He has called us to be light and salt in the world. So let's be. Father, help us to be all that You've called us to be. Help us, dear Lord, to take seriously. He said that You said that we will be salt and we will be light. Those who are part of this kingdom, this grand design and scheme that You have for the subjects of the kingdom, that's us. And we're to be light and salt. So help us, dear God, to fulfill Your call. Paul wrote, and we read in Ephesians 5, and we have received this light, Jesus Christ. He is now living within us, and we now must walk as children of light. It's not an option. It will be for all who know You and for all who have the light of life living within. So Lord, today take us and use us. Even here, we don't need to go back home into our worlds out there. That's all corrupt and messed up. But even here, Lord, in the shelter of Pilgrim Camp, we must still be light and salt to one another. All those that we come in contact with today, whether it be campers or guests or co-workers, Lord, today we just want to be that light and salt in the world, that we would bring life. So use us, I pray, to be all that You want us to be. In Your precious name we ask. Amen. Amen. God bless you. Have a great day.